presentation.
Hey everybody, welcome to No Flicks Given. I'm one of your hosts, Frank, and I would download a car. I'm just going to say it. I would. I'm not.
Would you download bear? Would you download a bear, Frank?
I would download a bear. Yeah.
I would download all of those things. That PSA series was aimed at the wrong audience, I think, because I think all of us would download a car.
Well,
if there was an option.
They made it seem so cool, like the music and the visuals and stuff. It was right on that Matrix Hackers kind of vibe too. But we're getting besides ourselves. I'm joined by Matt, Connor, and Peter. So we didn't know what we were going to do for this, and then Peter, light of my life, said he has a pretty strong inkling towards a certain movie and hasn't mentioned what it is yet. So, Peter, the floor is yours.
I might not be on the next couple episodes because my wife is about to give birth to our first child.
Yay!
So I wanted to squeeze in at least another one here because the due date is literally in a couple days. And so I thought we'd just be very on theme and we would do Rosemary's Baby.
Are you sure you want to do? I thought we had a moratorium on Roman Polanski movies.
Well, we should say from the top.
That's the problem with this. Yeah.
Roman Polanski is a terrible person.
He's a bad man. Who here has seen Rosemary's Baby?
Not me.
I have not, honestly.
I have no.
Okay. As the only person here that has seen Rosemary's Baby, I want to go on record.
Gatekeeping.
This is a very bad idea.
You're
a grown-up, you can make your own choices, but boy howdy.
Listen, we'll see a couple Hail Marys.
Given how your next few weeks are going to go.
It's like there's like a religious thing to it, right? Like I know very little going into this other than
this is what I know having never seen the movie. I know it's Mia Farrow, I know it's Roman Polanski. I know it's like Demon Baby and that's like the only thing that I know.
But it's like I mix it up with The Omen all the time. So now this will help me sort of discern the difference between those two.
This one will have a lot more soft lenses in it.
Yeah. Okay. I'm excited.
It's a good movie. I'll grant you that. It's a good movie.
But, you don't have to sell it. We're stuck with it at this point. So,
I'm also trying to be brave and do something scary. Be proud of me, guys.
Well, to be fair, you might not have a lot of opportunities for scary movies in the next 18 years. So,
also very true.
Great. Let's pop the tape in. Let's get this over with.
John Cassavetes a real piece of shit in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not even the tip of the fucking iceberg.
I have like three notes for the whole movie. Like I do not have a lot. I really got sucked into this one. I kind of loved it a lot. It's really, really good.
I'm so angry.
Yeah. What do you think? What does everyone else think?
Well, it's horror in a psychological sense, and especially between the timing of everything else that's going on in the world, this was a frustrating watch.
That's true.
And by the end of it, I wanted to just set everything on fire. So that's where I'm at.
But are you digging the movie for that? Like, separating all of that? Obviously, this was hard to watch, given everything.
It also falls into Polanski's shtick of driving things home a little bit further past the point where they need to be driven home, and that bothers me because it's like, hey, we got it already. And
you think he should have aborted it earlier?
Well, he just should have. Oh, God.
The boo box.
Nobody wanted anything to. No one giving the time of day for that joke.
No. Okay. Nope.
No jokes. This is a no jokes podcast.
Guys, my body, my voice.
The boo box. The boo box.
God.
I'm this close to just stopping the recording.
at its heart, this is a movie about a bunch of dudes deciding what is best for a woman's body, and then that when that woman is trying to like assert agency over her body, nobody listens to her.
Not a single person.
Not only and fucking old people.
Yes.
A lot of old
people. Old religious people.
Yeah.
Yes.
Old religious New Yorkers. That is a clear distinction.
That's the
make.
Left curve, but that, yeah, that we'll get
that
into
is that. The left curve.
But overall, Peter, what did you think of the film? You think?
So I really enjoyed it. I did. It is a slow burn, which I really enjoyed. It has two elements that I will mandate for every horror movie that is set in New York City now. And the first is looking for an apartment in New York.
Yes.
And the second is nosy fucking neighbors.
Yes.
Those two elements are now mandatory for any like horror or thriller set in New York.
Yeah. It's such a great setup, and it as somebody who has lived and tried to scrounge for apartments in New York, despite the fact that I would never live in an apartment that nice, there's a lot of reality to that experience.
As somebody that's currently looking for an apartment in New York, I mean, to me, that was the most horrific element of the movie. It hit really close to the home that I don't have.
They could have leaned into it a little bit more. I mean, they take a at the beginning of the movie, they're looking for an apartment, and we only see the one apartment they look at, but it is the apartment of an old woman who has died under like semi mysterious circumstances, and they find some weird stuff in the apartment. Like their stuff is still there.
Do they ever explain why she, like her and the woman who, first of all, do we need to do like a quick synopsis of this? This feels like one that we're late to the party and everyone listening kind of knows it. But basically, I'll run through it. Like we have feels like a newlywed kind of husband and wife move into a new apartment in Manhattan on the Upper East Side, I believe. And
what's that? Because it's the Dakota in real life.
Okay. Dakota is the, no, what's the,
it's on the, that's on the West Side.
What's the John
Yeah,
Lennon
it's on the
one?
West Side. Yeah, it's the one that John Lennon used to live in. A bunch of other famous people used to live in. Really nice, like so luxury apartments from the West 60s. Side. Yeah.
So they move into this apartment. They start their lives up, and then she real quick gets raped by Satan, and then basically we watch the. We're gonna peel that apart a little bit. I don't want to get into that.
Well, and she spends the rest of the movie thinking it was basically a fever dream, right?
Kind of. Yes. And then she starts to realize that everyone else in her life is kind of like part of this occult that is pushing for her to, like channeling her pregnancy towards where they want it to get to, which is, you know, the, and she's kind of like, it never really goes into the category of this, but it gets close to the like, am I insane or is this really happening to me kind of horror movie?
Yes. It verges a little bit on the vertigo scale of like a Hitchcock film.
Yeah, there's psychological part. I think there's still definitely the psychological element of it. Is this actually happening? Is this not actually happening? And who do I believe? That sort of stuff.
Pretty perfectly. Can't give this really enough. Like I thought this was pretty perfect start to finish. Like it's super disturbing and really hard to watch, especially with everything right now and especially who made it. But if you're able to table all that and sort of look at it in a vacuum, like just the frames from start to finish, like I know the context matters, but like, man, it is pretty great for how long it is.
I'm curious what Connor's experience was having now watched it a second time after the initial shock of watching it the first time at whatever point.
Oh, I'll never watch this again.
Actually, the first time I don't know what was going on with me the first time I watched it, but I honestly didn't remember much in the way of how rich in detail the movie is. Mm. Like the whole, like the lady that had lived in the apartment had been a witch was completely went over my head. The chanting coming through the thin walls had gone over my head. I mean, I remembered the broad strokes, and I certainly had more solid memories of the latter half of the movie when she's like gaunt and
super thin,
paranoid.
But
this time it registered very much as like a masterclass in storytelling in general, but cinematic storytelling in particular, because a thing that I am interested in, like as a producer of content is information and doling out information, and when you dole out information and knowing what your audience knows mm-hmm. when you dole that information out. And you kind of know everything that you need to know by the end of the tour of the apartment that something is very wrong with the with that situation. And it kind of
it's less a mystery than most people might try to play this movie. You pretty mm-hmm. much know, you're pretty much just watching things devolve rather than, you know, you really quickly, one of the things I couldn't believe was how fast the movie tells you that the husband's in on it.
That was my biggest fault with the movie, is I feel like that would have, that the husband and the neighbors are like there and like working together, that you see in, so in sort of this dream sequence when she is getting raped, you see the husband and the neighbors conspiring together and like, you know, confirming she's out and like this is like all part of the plan or whatever. And yeah. I felt like that was such a big reveal, and that's maybe 40 minutes into a 2:10 movie. And I felt like that could have been such a kickoff to the third act of this movie.
I think I agree, actually.
I disagree. I think what's great about it is we know that he's in on it, and she knows he's in on it, but she doesn't know that she knows that.
Yeah.
And a lot of the middle third of the movie is her not only figuring it out, but coming to terms with it. Because if her husband is in on some sort of plot, then she is completely alone. She has nobody because she's been completely isolated by these people and then her husband. And then her only the only friend that we know of outside of the apartment building gets murdered.
They throw a party and she has other friends who
she has,
you know, that
so many friends.
Right. And that was such a wake up call
than all of us combined. Let's talk.
They throw this Christmas party and like she starts talking with her friends in the next room because she's had all this abdominal pain, and her friends are like, what is going on? Like, why are you still seeing this doctor? Go and see this other guy. Like it's such going back to sort of the societal discussion about trusting your friends who really do have your back. And even though, like, you know, if something doesn't feel right and you get confirmation from somebody else that it doesn't feel right, it might not be right. And you might want to go and follow that intuition.
And even after that, she keeps on looking for help from men.
Yes.
And I think that's the point. Part at least one of the points.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think so.
I don't know how many female obstetricians there would have been in 1968, but
yeah,
she went to both of them. I think, there's a little bit of that. Maybe it played differently at the time. It's weird to put yourself back in there, which was like, I thought the way this was made, I was like, oh, this is like late 70s. No, this is 60s. This is so, so old for being this good. And mm-hmm. One of the things I really like took away from it that I've ever seen a movie do this better. Maybe some Fincher movies do it, but like, Polanski does this thing with like, I've never seen a director like move the camera a smaller amount and have it mean more. There's especially the one example of it is when you're looking at the shot of the armoire, like shoved into the back of the hallway where there's a door behind it, but we don't know that yet. If you watch that shot again, like Polanski does this thing where I think he cranks the camera like vertically, maybe 4 inches. Like it's so subtle and you don't even really notice it, but it's just enough to get a little bit more of a view of the top of the door frame. And it transcends like 4 or 5 times in the movie. He does that where like you're looking down a hall and you can kind of see somebody on the phone, but then he'll shift like maybe 2 inches to the right. I've never seen more like subtle camera moves that actually have like a specific goal they're trying to accomplish.
No, it's beautifully shot and it's soft colors and it's you do get a really strong sense of like late 60s New York, I feel like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There are a couple of sort of outdoor scenes where she's walking around a little bit or going out and meeting people. And I feel like you get sort of a strong sense of place, even though a majority of the film just takes place in the apartment.
Which painting it helps that make it feel less monotonous, I think, that drastic color change about 20, 30 minutes in really helps.
Yeah, no, it very much has like Polanski's visual trademark. Whenever I think of his films, like the shots from this are very much like of that look. And I mean, certain stuff is really beautiful framed, and like he's good with how long he's holding on shots and things like that. But yeah, that's, I mean, yeah, technically, I don't necessarily think I have any foibles with it.
Let's get all our praise out of the way real quick, and then we can dive into the monster that is Roman Polanski also real quick, because I don't really want, but like, I'll say, like, this might have the best shot dream sequences. Second best to 8.5, I feel. Like, this might be my second favorite version of dream sequences that I've seen in
the one that stuck with me is not the primary cult one, but the
the rest. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the one that really hit me is like very dreamlike was when she, what I'm imagining is remembering back to when she was in Catholic school and then the camera pans down and she's in her bed and it's just that weird warping of space that I found very intriguing and very dreamlike.
The one on the boat though, I liked that too a lot. Like the way, the absurdity of it. I don't know. I feel like I'm very critical of dream sequences in movies and shows because it's like a lot of people do horrible jobs with it, and he was able to do some pretty decent work with no extra budget. Like he just like pointed people in weird directions and had VO and you're not seeing mouths move. It's very simple stuff.
It definitely runs off of like dream logic and also what dreaming feels like, especially how she starts almost every line by like laying down and then she's up.
I think my favorite part of the movie is actually how normal everything feels.
Yeah.
Like a lot of this movie just feels like a slice of life, like relationship drama about two people just trying to figure out their stuff in New York. Right. Yeah. You know, struggling actor, stay at home wife, she wants kids, he's a bit of a hothead, and it's really focused a lot on that. And so you sort of get lulled into this horror movie by sort of the monotony of everyday life, which I think is really, really well done.
Yeah, I had a note about how the way that they portray the cult, the elderly New Yorkers, most people would go take one of two exits off the highway. You would do they're creepy from the start and it's like creepy because they're creepy, or they're overly nice to an eccentric degree and it's creepy because they're so nice. But instead they're like for this movie, they're like, no, they're really normal for the most part. There's a couple of weird bits here and there and they're a little too friendly, but like not more than you'd expect elderly people in the 60s to be. They're so real, and they never even when the curtains dropped, they don't change personalities. Like they're just themselves.
There is that. Although, I mean, the first time we see them, they're wearing basically candy cane colored clothes on the backdrop of the night, and you know, they like, oh, she's dead. No, that you know, like they are very odd people.
That cop, by the way, gives one of my favorite line readings. You better brace yourself for some bad news. She's dead. but that's also another sort of subtle hint, is that you realize that they had taken in this drug addicted woman who kills herself in the first 10 minutes of the film. And you realize sort of halfway through that they were grooming her to be like the bride of Satan.
Is that what it was? Because did they say why it didn't work?
No, they didn't say, but
she just caught on and killed herself, I guess.
Or they made her kill herself because yeah, they got
think,
a new
I think
one.
She was
in
probably
Mia
tossed
Farrow.
Out of the window by another one of the cult members. And what is that couple's name?
The Cassavetes.
The Cassavetes, which
played
which
by
sounds so
Ruth
much
Gordon.
Like Cassavetes. It really
yeah. I know.
Right.
Well, and the guy's named Roman Cassavetes. I mean, there's something very self-aware going on there. I don't know what it is precisely, but
I expected that couple. There's that twist. Like two thirds of the way through where you realize that the book, the husband is the son of this cult leader from the 1800s.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. And in my mind, I really thought, maybe this was just my like Jordan Peele kind of take on it, like how they would do this movie nowadays, which is the reveal that like that's the same, like it's not the son, it's still the dad, and he just was like ages slower. I really thought that's where they were going with that.
Me too.
Right? Okay.
Honestly, there's nothing to say that it wasn't.
Yeah.
Well, in the book,
it's got a picture of him when he was like 13.
Yeah.
So no, that is clear. I mean,
he has that dialogue where he's like, I've been everywhere in the world, and I'm like, oh, that tracks. Yeah. If you're immortal,
yeah.
Like I get it.
I think it lends more to the trying to keep the mundanity of it all, of him just being a dude.
Yeah,
because outside of dream sequences and the rape sequence and little weird shots of the baby at the end, all of it is just very straight on. So they're not trying to pull any
special effects.
Yeah. So there's really nothing supernatural happening, because most of the stuff that gets crazy is either dream sequences or drug induced. Mm-hmm. And we never really see the baby anyway. Like there's this understanding that maybe it's horrific looking, but you know, who knows how that relates, but everything else is like normal late 1960s as everything could possibly look.
That disappointed me. I wanted.
Oh,
really?
No, I liked that.
No,
because
no,
it's
no,
the
no,
brilliant
no, it's
thing.
Better. It's better, but in the
it's
moment,
way better. Whatever you're was, thinking in your mind is way scarier. And in some ways, I wish they hadn't shown Satan or the demon or whatever in the scene at all. I wish you don't see it, because whatever's in your mind is way more messed up than whatever they can put on the screen.
Yeah,
he looks like the Wolf Man from Monster Squad in the 80s. Like it's a
No, her reaction at the end when she sees the baby is horrifying. It's the best part of the movie.
She's excellent in this, by the way.
She gets snubbed at the Academy Awards. She was basically, so there is a story in the making of this film where she was married to Frank Sinatra at the time. And he was mad that she took this job. He wanted her to stop her career and just like stay at home. And so Polanski talks her into taking the role. She takes it. Sinatra's pissed and serves her divorce papers in the middle of shooting in front of all the cast and crew. He like sends a lawyer and she's like, I'm done. I'm not finishing this movie. And Polanski talks her into staying, telling her that your performance is so good. He shows her a rough 1 hour cut of the film. He's like, you're going to get nominated for an Academy Award and you're going to win. And then she doesn't even get nominated. But Ruth Gordon, who plays Mrs. Cassavetes, gets nominated and wins.
She won for this.
So she
earned it. She's fucking great.
No, she's fantastic in this movie.
I've never heard of that character. That's the thing, is like all I went in with was kind of what Peter did, where it's like, okay, demon baby. I think the baby is like a monster when it comes out, and that's all I really know. I didn't even know it took place in New York, honestly. Like I didn't know anything else. I knew there was like a Catholic Church element, kind of like a Satan, you know, Satan God kind of thing going on.
This is also one of my favorite movie posters of all time, because it's horrifying. Where it's all green and black, and it's just her head. It's her head silhouette facing up, and it's like a black hill with like a little like pram on top of it. It's, if you go to the Wikipedia page, it's the image on the poster. It's chilling. It's because she looks like she's dead.
Oh yeah, that's good.
Oh, it's whoever designed that poster, I hope they got an award of some kind too.
Carriage looks a little like the one the penguin had in the beginning of Batman Returns, but
well, think about that.
She's great. How do they do, I haven't looked up anything about this movie How do they do her like gauntness? Because does she actually lose weight, or is that just kind of like makeup doing a trick?
That I looked like this up. I tried to figure it out. I couldn't figure it out.
Mia Farrow was already a very small woman, but a lot of that is just makeup.
Yeah.
The way that like her cheeks are highlighted and like under the cheeks are like, you know, I mean, it's
paleness. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of that's in her performance too, because I'm sure if she was standing up straight and like talking, you know, confidently and not acting weak, that makeup wouldn't sell it.
Yeah.
Can we talk about JC a little bit in this?
John Cassavetes.
John Cassavetes, who is, I thought he was fucking excellent as the husband character. Because he never goes malevolent, and he's basically like, you can see him ignoring his own guilt the whole movie,
yeah,
in a really creepy, real way. Like, I was very uncomfortable with it, where he, like it comes so close to being easy to accept, like how he would have agreed to this, because it's like, oh, they wouldn't hurt, like I didn't want them to hurt, like they said they wouldn't hurt you, it's just a small thing, I'm just blinded one guy, like whatever.
Well, and to me, that's the biggest spoiler of the film, is that I feel like he's not even really a part of the cult. I feel like the cult found him and was like, we're really interested in your wife, and oh, by the way, we're gonna make you a big movie star if you know, do this thing to your wife.
No, I think that is what it is. I didn't think he was part of the cult.
Yeah, he cut a deal.
I thought he stayed late that first night, and they started to sort of tempt him with promises of career. Yeah. And then they probably, when they blinded that guy, was like him realizing that they know their shit. And went with it. What's weird is like he gets the one guy who got the part instead of him gets blinded, and he gets the part, and it seems to be going well. But after that, it's kind of abstract, his success. He doesn't talk about a lot of other roles he gets. He doesn't show a lot of, there's not a lot of physical evidence of their lives.
But by the end, he does have a line where he's like,
Paramount's calling, and by the end, you hear that he's turning into a movie star.
But I feel like you could have done, and I mean, I don't know, fucking telling Rosemary's Baby what to do better, but I feel like you could have done, like, they don't have a lot of furniture, and then throughout the movie, the house gets nicer and nicer and nicer, instead of, like, once they pretty much settle in, it's set. The secularism of it could have been enhanced throughout to just show that he's getting better roles, and she's getting nicer things, that kind of stuff.
I think that would highlight the fact that there is an arrangement too much. I think the fact that it does just sort of is going on in the background.
But don't helps you know? Don't you know there's an arrangement pretty early
on? It's supposed to be nebulous. That's the whole point. Like, it's from the purpose of like the lens of the film. Yeah, like you start to see the clues, but it's not overt. I think at least the way that I was reading into it is that it's supposed to make you still have a little bit of reasonable doubt that maybe this is just coincidence. And I think
a little bit of that.
It's also all about him.
Yeah.
I mean, the deal that he does, sure. I mean, can't really thematically benefit her all that much, apart from the fact that she's having this baby that she wants to have. But his whole deal is that he understands that he should care about his wife, but is much more concerned with his career. I mean, obviously they're comfortable to begin with. Like, they're doing fine.
Yeah.
He's going after the prestige. Yeah. And I
think watching this movie a second time through, if I go back and I just really focus on him, like, I think I would be even madder at him because of, you know, how he's like,
oh, it's infuriating.
Drink your drink, you know, drink the special drink they make for you. Keep going to the doctor. You know,
it's pretty rough.
It's awful.
It's been a rough couple of weeks for husbands on the fixed on the Netflix given feed.
This is the third Peter's pick about a mediocre man who's just with very questionable morals, and the second about a mediocre man who strikes a bargain with a witch.
Real quick, a couple things. I have questions just to see, because we're all coming into this fresh. The drink that they gave her was definitely cookies and cream ice cream, right? Like, that's all.
For the purposes of Mia Farrow, I hope so.
Okay. Yeah. So that's one thing.
Delicious.
That's
the two, that's an element of like witches and witchcraft that I don't think often get played enough in movies, is like the herbal mixing element.
There's a great line that they have early on when she first asks what's in it. the what's her name, the neighbor Rose. What's her Ethel?
Minnie, whatever.
So she says, as sarcastically, she says something that like sounds like a witch's spell, like toad's leg.
Well, it's the
snips and snails and puppy dog tails. Which is that's what little boys are made of.
Yeah, little boys.
Okay, couple things. I want to go through my list of like, here's where I thought think like what I thought while watching it. I want to talk to the other newbies for a second, Connor. So just hang tight.
Okay, cool.
The moment where she learns that the Dr. Abraham Sapien, whatever his name is. he's what is his name? Abe. They say it 2 million times.
Saperstein.
Okay. So when she learns that he also smells like the Tannis root thing,
which is not a real thing.
Was that a twist to either of you, or you knew the doctor was in on it the whole time, right?
That just sells it. I think that's the moment that she fully realizes that he's
like, again. So much of this movie is what we as the audience know and what. And how she figure when and how she figures it out.
And I think the doctor is in the dream sequence. I think he's there.
Yeah,
when
they're all naked.
I don't think I knew him at the point. So yeah, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, you just see a lot of naked.
The other thing is there's that part where they say the name is an anagram. What's the word where it's rearranged? Yeah. Anagram. Okay, so they say that, and in my brain, I immediately went, oh. Tannis is an anagram for Satan. That's where the movie's going. Okay, you thought that too, right?
Yeah,
Matt?
No, I had the same. Okay. I was like, oh, he's talking about Tannis, and that's what it. Yeah.
Okay.
My question was which name, because I was I don't know. Yeah,
that too. I really thought Tannis was going to be an anagram for Satan. I feel like that they left some food on the board.
Just because they don't point it out in the movie doesn't mean it's not.
Yeah, I mean they also allude to
it's not.
Like, oh,
if they don't point it out in the movie, it's not.
Well, they allude to the fact that it doesn't like it's not a root. It seems like it's some sort of a fungus or something other than what they claim it is. The one thing that I didn't quite wrap my head around was that she keeps getting fed the first concoction by Minnie, and it's making her sicker and sicker and sicker to the point where she wants to go see the other doctor. But then she suddenly switches up the concoction and then everything's fine again. What was the point of giving her the thing that was making her sick? Like, there didn't seem to be a point for them to want to make her feel bad. The whole point is to actually make sure that she carries this baby to term. And
so my read on it as somebody who is watching somebody go through this right now is that the first trimester sucks.
Yeah.
You are sick. You are sick at least in the case of my
wife. It's apples to oranges though, right? Like this is not, this is not a one to one.
No, but like the first trimester of being pregnant just sucks. The second trimester.
Frank, are you mansplaining to Peter?
I think Peter's mansplaining to us.
The second trimester is much better. You have a lot more energy. And then the third trimester is just awful because you might get sick again. You're just uncomfortable. Yeah. It's terrible. So there's only really 3 months of a 9 month period where you feel like a semi-normal person. Mm. And that is kind of, if you break it down in watching her grow, they kind of blow through the second trimester where you have sort of renewed energy and you feel good, right back into the third trimester where everything goes wrong at the end.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if there is some sort of narrative parallel in focusing on those aspects. Maybe. I don't know.
That wouldn't surprise me. I mean, everything in this movie is a fucking metaphor for
something else.
But for right. how society, how men, whatever, treat women, especially with relation to control over their bodies and pregnancy. And like, just that's another thing of like, who's believing who? And like, the only time that she's getting any like honest advice from anybody is when she gets her young friends who are under the age of 60 in the party and they're like, this isn't normal. You should talk to another doctor.
I have only three notes in my book here, and we haven't touched on any of them, so I want to run through them real quick and then we can get back in to stuff. My first note is I was surprised by the opening font and the opening tone of the credits because it's a horror movie. It's one of the scariest movies I've ever heard of. But the font I wrote down looked like if Miss Piggy had a fragrance. So that was one. Another thing that I guess I've always thought of but never put it into words is like, why can no one kiss in old movies? Why does every kiss in every old movie look terrible? What is that? Every single kiss looks like awkward and weird, and like they're touching teeth. Like every single one.
I think looks part bad. Of that comes from the drama of it. Initially, all of this coming from essentially stage play stuff. Of you're playing for the cheap seats, and you're making it a little bit unreal because it's supposed to be this heightened moment. So that okay, I mean, because that's that. An fucking everything.
You don't kiss Amanda like that. I mean, that's exclusively
our shoulders have to connect for it to be a real kiss.
Katie forbids me from doing, and I quote, Shatner kissing her, and it's explicitly it's like, yeah, it's there's no you hold
the shoulders.
Your partner's head in your hands with both hands. And then start like just not moving your lips, but just pressing your face up against them.
Of course, this episode's Star Trek moment would be like the Polanskiest of all.
It is Star Trek's Roman Polanski. Rosemary's Baby does get mentioned and is watched by the crew of the NX-01 in an episode of Star Trek Enterprise.
Oh, cool.
Not to mention the guy who shows them the apartment, the actor Elijah Cook. He plays Kirk's defense lawyer in the famous TOS episode Court Martial.
Oh.
Elijah Cook, whenever he shows up in a movie, you know you're... He's like a stamp of quality.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know, he like, not in on it?
No, I don't think...
No.
It is so funny not in on it. No, we'd be in that room at the end. It's just funny that like he's just so oblivious to like he keeps showing people these apartments and like, keep dying.
Like every other landlord, he is absent-minded and completely removed from the lives of his tenants.
Especially if he's just a broker.
Yeah, that's true. I had the
ultimate leash.
I thought he lived there, though.
My understanding was he owned the building or he was a representation of the building management, but it's...
Yeah, that's how I got.
Yeah.
I guess he does live there because he is outside the lady swan dives out the window.
He makes a comment about how they would sell the apartment for more money if they could. So there's an implication of potentially
rent-stabilized, old New York kind of feel to it. Yeah. My third note is actually the one I kind of wanted to chat about, which I can't think of another movie that actually did this, where the low point of this movie is when she's at her happiest, when everything's going the best in the weird way. I think it's right after she starts feeling better in the second trimester or maybe the start of the third, where everything seems to be going well, and she's like, now she's fully given up on the conspiracy theory of what she thought she knew and leaning into it. She's cleaning the apartment. She's reorganizing. Like, it's that, like, that's the low point to me a bit, or the start of the low point at least, where it's like, wow, it's really weird that, like, that inverse of feelings where she's at her happiest since this whole ordeal started.
Yeah, what? I don't know if I would... I wouldn't classify... In my head, it feels like the whole plot is just this descent into the Grand Canyon, and where you're terming the low point for me was just a plateau before the final drop.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Because, like, I mean, the part that I was most affected by was earlier on when it's like she's drinking this thing that she has this constant pain. She's saying, like, there's like a wire or something in her stomach. And the doctor just keeps saying, oh, no, just, yeah, it's fine. It should go away in a couple days. And it's like, oh, it's been months and it's going to go away in a couple days. All right, asshole. And then, like, and she's at the party and just losing it because she's constantly in pain and just doesn't know what to do with it because every person around her who's mostly either an old person, a man, or both is just brushing it off and not validating, gaslighting her on the entire fucking thing.
Point that she throws the party, right? She's like, it's only going to be young people. It's only going to be our friends. And she finds a way to like remove herself to talk to people who she trusts. And she's like, I feel like I'm going crazy. And that's like the first big confirmation for her that like something is not right and I'm not crazy. And, you know, that's when she really goes down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Right? And her friends have to shove John Cassavetes out the door to keep him out of that conversation.
Yeah. That was one of the more satisfying moments of the film, of them just keeping him away.
Yeah.
There's no satisfying, other than that, there's really no satisfying moments in this whole.
No, not really.
Eating raw liver is that. Not satisfying.
I mean, only for me,
Frank.
But
oh, the raw stuff really started to freak. They gave up on that about halfway through, but like that really was freaking me out and really scary.
Apparently, she really did eat raw liver, and she was a vegetarian at the time.
Oof.
Mm. So
we skipped a step.
But yeah, I lost my patience with the elderly people just before Rosemary did, because the note literally before the moment she says that she's going to have a party with young people is, ugh, these fucking olds. Because they're just, you're surrounded by people. Because that was, I was starting to wonder, I was like, do they not know anyone who's like their age? Because everybody they're surrounded with for most of the movie is like a pensioner.
I will say, for people who are wondering like how scary this movie actually is, I think for what we're used to sort of in the world, it's not that scary. I would put this on sort of the same level as Get Out, where it's not actually scary, and what you are thinking of throughout the film is way scarier than what is actually being shown on screen.
It's true.
I almost don't call this a horror because of how much it's I know, but there's something about it that just held me back from saying that, because like it's really,
it's much more of a psychological thriller.
Yeah, maybe that's what I'm
and a drama
for.
I mean, the only thing that really makes it horrific or like fall into the horror genre is the fact that the main background antagonist happens to be Satan.
But I think it's horror in the more traditional sense of like body horror of you're not being hit with jump scares. It's not blood and guts.
No.
It's like slow burn dread, which is my favorite kind of horror. But
it's horror in the same way that Frankenstein's horror.
Yeah.
In that the idea behind it is horrific.
Yes. Yeah.
There was one moment where I thought they were setting up for a jump scare, and they don't do it, which is when, so she's
phone booth?
She goes back. No. Well, that could have been one, but it's actually after that. So she goes to the different doctor to try and like get him to induce her and like give birth someplace where nobody knows. And then the doctor calls the husband and the other doctor. They take her back to the apartment. She locks herself in the apartment, and then she's in the closet trying to figure out what's going on, and you can see people move behind her. And they're just kind of like tiptoeing.
Oh,
but
that
like,
was good.
What a reveal that would have been had it just been like somebody like she moves like slightly and you just see somebody standing behind her.
Yeah.
But they don't do that. And then like they when she realizes that there are people there, they calmly walk in. They're like, hey, we're here to like care for you. Yeah. And they sedate her. But that could have been just a massive jump scare.
But the way they play it, I mean, it's terrifying, but that moment is also borderline funny, right?
It is.
It's
when you see the people like tiptoeing,
It's like a Marx Brothers bit. But I'll say the last thing I'll say is it almost feels like this is, if Hereditary had no special effects, that's what this movie would be like. Is like that's it has that kind of like I had a lot of similarities between the two. Feeling just storyline wise, I want to talk about the ending, because I totally think this is just me sort of like feeling like The Exorcist in that vein, where I was so sure she was gonna like grab the baby and jump out the window because the other woman jumped out, and then they have that setup about like there's some backstory about she was at a nunnery and told them about a window that is dangerous, so they shut down. What was that one dream sequence?
Yeah, the first dream sequence.
It's
yeah,
more of it's a Catholic school with nuns. Yeah, there's a window that's dangerous.
I think say the word nunnery. It feels really good to say. I think I wanted to just to work it in. Say it. Trust me. It's like a little roller coaster for kids. No, but I really thought, what did you guys think? How did you think this was going to end up until the very end? Like, how do you think it was going to end?
I was kind of with you. I thought that she was going to do herself in. I really didn't know. But I'm also a scaredy cat, and I had the Wikipedia page open as I was watching this.
No.
Cheater.
That's Boo Box. If anything is Boo Box, then that's Boo
fine.
Box.
The Boo Box.
No, Boo Box. No!
I was hoping that she was going to go on a murdering spree inside that room, just because I really wanted everybody in that room to be dead in like the most gruesome
way possible.
When she walks
in at the end with the knife,
get her agency back.
Yeah, I understand where they go with it, but yeah, I wanted there to be some comeuppance for the Satanists because I was so tired of them by the end of the film. But I understood that didn't.
They really got you, didn't they?
I hate zealots. I hate people who think they're right, yeah, or not think they're right, who believe in their heart of hearts that they know that they are right, yeah, and don't have any space open for self-reflection. Doubt. And so it's one of my...
Yeah, usually they get me too, yeah, and we're on the same page with that. That is, yeah, I totally agree with you. That is the worst of the worst.
But yeah, so I was hoping, but I understood for the purposes of the narrative that it was going to be a quiet implosion of her entering just the shock of the situation that she's in, and just kind of, which is what happens in cults. It's just that this is like textbook of what happens in abusive relationships and cults.
Well, and I think that is what ultimately makes this a horror film, is that the bad guys win.
Yeah.
Yep.
The evil entity gets everything that it wants at the end, including the what is, I can't tell if this is a satisfying ending or not, but the fact that she really does give in to her motherly instincts at the end, and it seems like she's going to raise this kid.
Yeah.
Well, it's also like, what other choice does she have?
Yeah.
You know, she's been sort of systematically disempowered the entire movie, and not that she was particularly powerful at the beginning of it. You know, they have left her with no other option. It struck me very much as like the end of the frequent ending of Twilight Zone episodes where the protagonist is doomed to just stare at the horror as the credits roll.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause that's it's like the end, like there's nowhere to go from here. Checkmate.
It does feel like a very good Twilight Zone episode. Like, which I think is the best sort of psychological horror does it feel like a Twilight Zone episode? Yeah.
No, I mean, there's a reason most of the best horror movies have like really downer endings, because it's just like there's nothing to latch onto watching it again. Like there's nothing you can't picture the evil getting defeated or, you know, whatever the fuck. But I really love this. This is really good for a movie that takes place only almost entirely in like one New York City sized apartment.
I mean,
although that is a huge fucking place.
I was going to say that.
Oh yeah, my third note is I would commit murder for this place.
Yeah.
Would you join a satanic cult for that place, Connor?
Yeah, honestly, I might. I'm single right now.
Would you let Satan's spawn harvest itself inside your stomach for 9 months to live in that place?
Probably not.
I would.
No. Yeah,
for sure.
It's much more
West Side. West Side.
The Upper West Side. I mean, yeah, no.
It's a hard pass for me.
Yeah, I say my favorite moment of the whole movie is when Rosemary drops the knife and it sticks into the floor.
Yeah,
oh, that was a nice.
And
touch.
Minnie gets really pissed off because like it's like a ding in the floor.
Yeah,
that is an excellent part.
Living with two olds right now, I felt that very intensely. Where she was just like, "You ruined the floor." It's also like this is the ultimate banality of evil movie.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like they're trying to invite her into a cocktail party after, you know, this horrific thing has happened and she's traumatized. And, the thing that Minnie's worried about is a little ding in the parquet flooring.
Yeah. That one guy just smiling, taking picture after picture.
Oh, that fucking guy.
Yeah. What a little bit of world building. The Japanese photographer guy? That just, yeah. This is like no real, like they don't expand on that at all. But like,
you're kind of want to go back and see if he's in any other scenes. If he's like in the background.
They must like, all, I bet they're all in the, you know, the one scene. The big scene. You know, the scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Polanski scene.
The scene.
That was tough to watch knowing the director. That was really hard to get through.
Yeah.
So is this sort of the end of the episode where we kind of like acknowledge that Polanski did good work, but also condemn him for just being just an awful, terrible person? And, you know, you can go and read up on why he is a terrible person, but we don't necessarily have to go into that here.
Yeah.
Is there still an argument to be made? I feel like he's universally sort of like, I know he's not in, like he has not gotten,
I mean, Hollywood still has his back. Every time he ends up in the fucking papers, you get signatures
I know there is a discussion to be had about the, which we're not going to have, about the distinction between like the artist and the art a little bit.
There's something
It's like, listen, like hundreds of people, hundreds for every movie, dozens to hundreds of people are involved and make lots of little decisions that make the movie what it is. You know, Polanski was a particularly, he was a sort of like social icon of the time. He's a sort of like weird, tiny European man that came to America, made big movies in Hollywood, made a lot of money. He was young. He was married to
Sharon Tate.
He was amazing. And, you know, he was a bad dude. And honestly, he wasn't the only bad dude involved in the making of this movie.
Yeah.
Robert Evans was the executive producer, and he was a scumbag. There's a lot of scumbaggery that goes through all of this era of Hollywood and probably all of the history of Hollywood.
Yeah.
And that's something sort of culturally I think we need to figure out how to reckon with beyond sending Harvey Weinstein to jail, as satisfying as that was. Because the kind of thing that allowed all of these guys to treat women especially, but basically not rich people in Hollywood as poorly as they did, still remains today.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of
see the Academy Awards.
Sorry,
this past
I didn't
year.
Mean to go. I didn't mean to go on a rant there.
Yeah,
I just sort of something got sparked off.
No, it's a good point, and it's good to remind ourselves that, you know, your Weinsteins of the world, they were not the first, and that Hollywood has a long history of, you know, doing this. I mean, yeah, I think of movies especially like Hail Caesar. That you know, where the Josh Brolin character, his whole job is to make sure stuff like that doesn't hit the press.
Yeah.
That people don't find out about the less than savory side of you know, executives and directors and movie stars and you know, keeping things tidy and images, you know, spot free.
Yeah.
That goes back to the beginning of Hollywood.
And I think what makes it more germane to this discussion is the unfortunate pairing of the subject material and the author of, or the director of that material. Yeah. Cause it's like, it was impossible for me to separate the thoughts about Roman Polanski from all of the shit that goes on, especially in the beginning of the film, where, like, even if there wasn't a supernatural thing happening, her husband cops to having sex with her while she was passed out unconscious.
Oh, yes. We just brushed right over that weird.
But like,
that's his alibi.
Yeah, no, that sets the bar for who he is for the rest of the fucking movie.
I know, or you know, there's a lot to be said about Roman Polanski and what he's sort of done.
not by us.
But I think we can take some small semblance in the fact that if you watch the very end of Rush Hour 3. Chris Tucker and Jackie Chan punch Roman Polanski in the face and the credits roll. Like, that is the ending of that movie. So whenever you're feeling pretty bad, just throw on the worst Rush Hour movie and enjoy
Didn't
yourself.
Didn't know that.
So Peter, before we watch the movie, I warned you that this was a bad idea. Having watched the movie and discussed it for an hour, how do you feel? What was that warning accurate? Was
here's the thing. Here's the thing, Connor. A big part of the movie is the husband's a piece of shit. And I don't think I'm a piece of shit because I did not sell my wife to a bunch of Satanists.
Fair.
So that's sort of like how I'm living. Because it's not the baby's fault. It's not the wife's fault. It's definitely the husband's fault. So that's kind of on me. And as far as I can tell, unless there's something I don't know about, we should be okay from that end. Plus, we're gonna get the kid baptized. We're gonna be, you know, all set on that regard. So we'll be cool there.
You are famously not a piece of shit. I agree with that.
Thank you. You know, I don't want to self assume, but I feel like that's my reputation. I don't know.
Peter just wanted to lower the bar before he started being a father for us. But
that's right.
I have a philosophical question.
If I have to clear John Cassavetes, I'm okay.
I'm so excited for you, buddy.
Yeah, pretty sure you're going to be like, you're going to miss one episode, then realize you're like, guys, I have tons of time. I'm just hanging out with a baby. Like
probably.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. But either way,
we'll have Bagel Bite be like the little pod mascot.
Yeah.
That is true. I am officially naming my child Bagel Bite.
All right.
I thought it was Flick. I thought we said Flick. Is that
no? It's it.
This is his middle name.
We got a branding deal. We got corporate sponsorship. So, baby Bagel Bite.
Looks like a NASCAR.
I mean, at least it wasn't guaranteed rate because that's really the bottom of the barrel there.
What did you just say?
Guaranteed rate is the name of the White Sox baseball field right now because that's the name that they sold the rights to, and it's like the worst naming rights name.
What's
I think
the
I've
second
heard.
Word you keep saying.
Rate.
Oh.
R-A-T-E.
Sorry, I got Polanski on the brain.
Oh, for the love.
The Americans and the French need to work together in the spirit of brotherhood. Together we can do anything. Anything.
He's right, Lee. Together we can do anything. You go this way.
And I'll go that way.
I have a lot to say, and I just realized I left my notes in the other room, so someone else go first.
Well, I didn't realize we were back yet.
I also forgot
my
notes.
Oh, for the love
of
God.
We'll come back after Frank and I both get our notes.
Hey, guys, let's all fail at the same time. How about we do that?
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed the show, remember to like and subscribe. Follow us on Instagram at NoFlixGivenPodcast. See you next time.